While the Jeffrey Epstein story has focused, for the most part, on politics, conspiracies, things like that, it's vital not to forget that there are human beings who have been made victims from being subjected to what they were. This is true about all victims of human trafficking. You see, we as observers of these stories, we hear about the rescue of someone from this evil and think, well, that's the end of the story. And certainly not for them. What do these victims need for recovery? What do and can their future hold for them? With us now to explore all this is someone who's helped victims in their trafficking aftermath as part of the team at Freedom Network USA and as director of legal advocacy with Volunteer Lawyers for Justice in New Jersey, Jessica Kitson. How are you today, Jessica?
I'm great. Thanks so much, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Two websites. We have them at our homepage as well for Freedom Network USA. It's freedomnetworkusa.org. Volunteer Lawyers for Justice in New Jersey, VLJNJ.org. And again, those are over at our homepage for your reference. Certainly, hopefully, I hope you will take the time to learn about this aspect of the story, which not enough people are paying attention to. As I said in the introduction, Jessica, the outsiders like myself, we hear the rescue and the prosecution. We think that's the end. What lies ahead in the psyche, the well-being, the recovery for a victim of human trafficking after the public pretty much turns away from their story?
That's right. I think that's such an important question. And of course, I want to preface by saying there's no one-size-fits-all answer, right? No two survivors are the same. No two trafficking experiences are the same. But where there is commonality is the need for services. And so whether those services are legal services that my organization, Volunteer Lawyers for Justice, provides, or the incredible social services that are provided by social workers, by housing advocates, mental health providers, we know that victimization leads to trafficking. And for someone who's already experienced trafficking, they are at their highest risk of re-victimization and re-trafficking if they aren't receiving the necessary services to help them put their trafficking behind them and move forward and really rebuild their life with safety and outside the bounds of their traffickers.
And relying on what you said, too, if you talk to a victim of trafficking, you've talked to one victim of trafficking, basically. It's hard, like they say with autism, you can't have a blanket statement for all. But generally speaking, how common is it for the victim to make themselves a victim?
I'm not sure I fully. So yeah. I think, right, what leads to victimization, right, is it's going to be lots of different things, but the commonality is vulnerability. And vulnerability can be a lot of things. Some people become victims of human trafficking and they're really, their sort of gateway vulnerability is poverty. That's a very common thread. But child abuse and child sexual trauma can also lead to that. Unstable immigration status can lead to that. Members of the LGBTQ community can be at a higher risk of victimization. But really the commonality is that underlying vulnerability. And so the vulnerability is what makes someone much more susceptible to the trafficking that happens. And trafficking, of course, itself can also look like a lot of different things. There's labor trafficking, there's sex trafficking. It happens in different industries. But really the same thing is that force, fraud, and coercion exists because that person was vulnerable to the demands and the trickery of their traffickers.
Now, on the other side of the equation, too, in the aftermath, how often, how frequent is it for a victim to blame themselves for everything that happened to them?
That's pretty common. We see a lot of survivors who are experiencing a tremendous amount of shame and guilt over what's happened. They do blame themselves for choices that they made, which is unfortunate, right? Because at the end of the day, it is the trafficker that is responsible for what they did. But part of what we are doing, and I can speak primarily from the legal community,
sure,
part of what the lawyers who work with survivors are doing is really trying to look at what we can do from a legal perspective to help get that person back on their feet. So some of that sometimes is helping with criminal record clearing, right, which it might be counterintuitive, but it is not uncommon at all for a survivor of human trafficking to have a criminal record that is a direct result of their human trafficking. And it's because of acts that they were forced to commit at the hands of their trafficker. But then they might be out of the trafficking, but they are left with a criminal record, which makes it incredibly hard, adds to that guilt and that shame. And so, thankfully, most states in the country, including New Jersey, now have laws in which the person can actually seek to clear their record, showing that they are a survivor of human trafficking.
Looking at the numbers, and this is one of those issues where you, when you hear the numbers, you have to just automatically assume that these are low-ball numbers because of the darkness that these actions hide in. Globally, about 25 million people are subjected to human trafficking, forced labor, every year. And why does this happen? Well, it generates, again, low-ball number, around $150 billion in illicit profits, not just revenue, profits, annually. So, Jessica, as we all know, there's a reason crime exists is because there's money. Now, on the legal side, how is this one of those cases where, as we've seen trafficking increase in significant ways, significant amounts, is the law keeping up with the crime?
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. Right? And in human trafficking is a crime of opportunity. And it is exactly as you said, it is looking for ways to make money. It is a business enterprise, an immoral one, a criminal one, but a business enterprise nonetheless. And really what we need to be thinking about is recognizing that if we can stop it from that money-making portion of things, that's what we have to get to. But again, I really go back to, I think if we can limit the vulnerabilities that lead folks to be more likely to be trafficked, that is how we get at the root cause of stopping human trafficking.
Talking with Jessica Kitson, who is part of the team at Freedom Network USA and Director of Legal Advocacy with Volunteer Lawyers for Justice in New Jersey, freedomnetworkusa.org, lvjnj.org, their respective websites. You are listening to Issues and Ideas. We talk about the courts. We talk about organizations like Freedom Network USA and the work they do. One half of trafficking happens, just verbally speaking, in workplace. It's labor trafficking, sex trafficking. Does the business community have a responsibility in, who they hire, checking in, and, just be aware, almost like, we talked earlier in the show about school bullying and how teachers have a responsibility to observe and say something if they see something. It's a cliche, I know, but there's some truth and foundation to it. Does the business community have a role to play in, if not stopping, at least limiting the spread of trafficking in the workplace?
I think so. I think when we think about labor trafficking and thinking of it in terms of people exploiting cheap labor, I think all businesses can be looking to see whether or not they are participating in a system that is demanding labor be provided at a rate that is just not sustainable, that is not within the bounds of what our labor laws require. And so being a little bit curious about making sure that we are not part of a supply chain that is being exploitative is absolutely a responsibility that businesses have. I would argue that everybody has that responsibility to make sure that we are not participating inadvertently or not in a system that is exploitative of human capital, of human labor.
We have seen policies come about now. You mentioned how immigration status plays a role in people falling into the trafficking darkness. And in the aftermath, there are needs to restabilize and rebuild a life. And we've seen programs and legislation passed on a federal basis, which is making things challenging if you are an immigrant and challenging if you are going to rely on programs like Medicaid and SNAP. How much of this is going to add to the difficulty of helping someone get their life back together in the aftermath of being a trafficking victim?
I'm afraid to say that I'm concerned it's going to have a tremendous impact, and it's going to lead to a lot more victimization in years to come if we don't recognize this and change course, because exactly what you said, when systems that are designed to protect people go away, people are left with a lot less choices. And so they make difficult decisions. They stay in an exploitative situation or relationship. And it's because they have nowhere else to go or think that they don't have anywhere else to go, or there's a lot of fear. And so all of the policies that we're seeing, from immigration to the social safety net, are absolutely going to create more vulnerability and ultimately more victims.
And just to wrap up on the outsider side of things, to stigmatize a victim for any reason is obviously wrong, but is there a confusion where people hear the term trafficking? You know, she or he was a victim of trafficking. They automatically think prostitution. It's almost rarely that situation. There are so many elements to what trafficking is. What do people have to better understand to either directly or even indirectly just providing an environment to be an asset for someone who is recovering from trafficking?
Yeah, I think that's right. And certainly sex trafficking is absolutely something that exists, and we have survivors about that. But as you point out, labor trafficking is another piece of it. It often is completely separate from prostitution or any related sex trafficking. And so we just have to recognize that it can look like a lot of different things. For labor trafficking, two of the biggest sectors that we see that in are agriculture and the domestic work, you know, whether that's home health aides, or other domestic workers, and there's a lot of hiddenness to it. And so I think what we have to just recognize is that human trafficking exists. It exists everywhere in this country. It is, it does not discriminate on the basis of gender. It does not discriminate on the basis of age. And so everybody should be thinking about how we can not only prevent it, and again, that's getting to, you know, limiting those vulnerabilities that make someone more likely to be victimized, and then also recognizing the importance of having those systems in place to support people once they have identified as survivors and really helping them with what they need to rebuild and move forward.
It is challenging for you listening, but it has been and can be done. And if this is a darkness that you or someone you know or you suspect is having to reside in, there is hope and there is a path, and that's the work of freedomnetworkusa.org, where you can find out more information and for you to gain a better understanding of this issue, because this is not an exaggeration, I don't think, on my part. You might be a co-worker of someone who is being forced into labor trafficking situations. So keep that in mind as you hopefully explore the information that's at Freedom Network USA's website and learn more about volunteer lawyers and justice in New Jersey. Their website, vljnj.org. She's a member of the team at Freedom Network USA, Director of Legal Advocacy with Volunteer Lawyers for Justice in New Jersey. Jessica Kitson, thanks so much for giving all of us the path to a better understanding and respect for how much more to the story of human trafficking there is in the aftermath and the importance of supporting the victims. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks so much, Chris.